Time to check in with our friend Michael Hurley of WBZ in Boston and see what's going on in the Boston sports scene. Hello, Michael.
How are you? Sorry to interrupt Dancing in the Moonlight. I feel like I ruined everyone's fun.
We can play it again. You can dance a little bit if you'd like.
It's all right. I'm not much of a dancer, but you know, I'm here for the people, and that's really what I'm about.
I don't believe you're not much of a dancer. I think I've seen some moves, I believe, somewhere along the way, but we'll talk about that another day. It's been a kind of a big day for the Patriots. It looked like going to be a quiet free agency period from them. Did you see this coming, the signing of Juju Smith-Schuster?
I think we all saw a receiver coming, but I think what's the surprising part comes in the straight-up choice they made for Juju Smith-Schuster over Jacoby Myers. I don't think there's any way to interpret the choice they made other than they decided they wanted Juju more than they wanted Jacoby Myers when they signed very similar, if not exactly identical, contracts. That's kind of the message that was sent, and you saw it with Jacoby Myers saying "cold world" on Twitter. It certainly is, and it may be no colder in the NFL than in New England. I think we know that.
Now, by and large, would you say this is kind of a lackluster free agent class?
Like overall league-wide?
Yeah.
I would, and that was evident to me in wide receiver and cornerback, two premier positions. The top player at receiver was Jacoby Myers, and the top cornerback was Jamel Dean. That's not exactly prime time type stuff that's going to get anybody excited. So I think where a lot of the money and a lot of the best players were at defensive tackle and offensive tackle, which are positions we're not allowed to really talk about on the radio for more than 5 seconds, or else everyone falls asleep. So I would definitely say it was a pretty lackluster, to use your word, for sure.
See, and I was going to ask you about these new offensive tackles the Patriots are bringing in.
Yeah, they play tackle on the offensive line, and they are fine at it. I think that's the situation. I think ultimately, Isaiah Wynn is heading out. I think we all knew that probably around week 7 last year. That was pretty evident. So they need someone to play right tackle, and I don't think either guy that they got, the Calvin Anderson from Denver or Riley Reif from Chicago, who's 34, he's been in the league 11 years, he might be more of an injury risk, but is a good player to have in the room, a good leader to lead maybe some younger guys that might need it. They should be quite all right there.
Patriots said goodbye to Jonnu Smith. Was that a case of addition by subtraction?
You know, that's a tough one to look at if you're a player, because he would have carried a $16 million cap hit if he stayed on the team. He's not on the team, and he carries a $12 million cap hit. So the Patriots decided a $12 million cap hit and not Jonnu Smith was better than a $16 million cap hit and Jonnu Smith. So that's the nature of the business, but that has got to be a tough one to swallow for any NFL player. I still think he's a good player. I still think he's got something that he'll be able to accomplish in this league, and Arthur Smith will know how to get that out of him in Atlanta, but definitely a yikes situation. And you mentioned the lackluster free agent class this year. That free agent class 2 years ago was kind of the warning signal not to overspend when the guys just aren't there. You can't spend as if the best players are available just because you have the money and the need. You end up making moves like that one, which ultimately hurt the team in the long run and the short run.
All right. Now, I may be paraphrasing a bit, but I think I'm close to correct on this quote from Pat's chat when it came to Jonnu Smith. I believe you said, after 2 years of playing like ass, but you followed it up by saying, with all due respect.
Yes. Yes, it's important to respect the players. And I was obviously joking, but I do think, you see a guy like that, the work that goes in, and he gets the contract that's life-changing, and I don't think he ever got a fair look here. It was week 3 of the 2021 season. He had 3 or 4 drops against the Saints, one of which was picked, and he really never got featured on offense again. That was his highest target count for a game in his entire two-year tenure, and it just feels like, I don't know why you spend all that money on two tight ends and you never use them at the same time. You never really use one at all. So, that's the Jonnu Smith story.
We're talking with Michael Hurley here on Downtown. So What is the plan for the Patriots? Is there an actual plan?
Well, it looks like they're going to try to trade for a receiver. We'll see what that entails. I don't know that Bill Belichick will ever in his life trade the 14th overall pick. I should have checked. When they traded for Brandon Cooks, I'm guessing, so that was 2017. They were coming off a Super Bowl season. I'm guessing that was the 31st or 32nd overall pick. The 14th pick is another animal entirely. I would be shocked if they sent that, especially for a receiver who's due to get paid in a year like Jerry Jeudy. So I'm thinking that pick gets made. It could be somewhere like there's a lot of tight ends in this draft. I know it's psychotic to think of trading using the 14th pick on a tight end, but they really only have one NFL-caliber tight end on the roster in Hunter Henry, and there's some talent there at the position in the draft. There could be a good value pick there. They've done it before, thinking back to Ben Watson. Gronkowski in the second round was a high pick. Hernandez, we don't talk about him, but he was a high pick as well. So I kind of think they might do that. I was thinking initially they'd go receiver because there's a lot of talented, quick slot guys that, you know, kind of fit the Patriots mold. But if they already got Juju, they might not double up at that position. So my guess is something like tight end, which is crazy to say out loud, but I just did it.
So is that the biggest area of need?
I think outside corner is still a need. I know they re-signed Jonathan Jones. I didn't see anything from him last year that made me think, okay, they don't need a number one outside corner. They're good. He was good when not covering, you know, some of the best in the league, but when he was tasked with covering Jamar Chase or Justin Jefferson or Stephon Diggs, he just isn't in that league. And he was really cast outside of his what should be his role. So I don't blame him for that. I just think if you want to compete in an offensive league where star receivers are now dominating and are kind of the key to everything, you need that guy to not shut them down, but limit them, and they don't have them. So that is a need, but I honestly don't see how they fill it. I don't think they're going to do it with a rookie, and there's no free agents out there that can do it. And you never know if a trade springs someone loose, but it feels like that's a need that won't get filled.
So realistically, is there anything that we've seen that would lead you to believe that they are more than around a 500 team that's maybe the fourth best in the division?
Yeah, unfortunately not. And if Mr. Rodgers goes to New York, which looks like he's going to try to do, I think it's really going to be a battle for third place between Miami and New England, and we can just lock those two teams in, Buffalo and the Jets, at the top of the division. And I don't know, not to place expectations too highly on the New York Jets, that usually backfires, but it does feel like the Patriots are falling behind. The sports books, legal betting now in Massachusetts, everyone's losing their money. Congratulations to us down here. The sports books certainly reflect that if you look at the AFC East odds. And I think that's right. I don't think there's anything you can say that inspires you. And that's to say, I don't know that they could have made any moves this week that would have really changed that. It's just kind of the predicament they're in with the roster they have that, I don't know, the days where you could say, all right, go to free agency, get one or two guys, and you're talking 12, 13, 14 wins are so far gone that it's hard to find their way back there, I think.
The Bruins, after being on such a terrific ride all season long, a little bit of a struggle here. Three losses in the last four games. Should there be any cause for concern?
Moderate to low. They're not at risk of, you know, having their whole season crumble and fall apart. That they had too good of a start for that to be a reality. But yeah, I think there's reason to believe that there's some things to work on. I think the power play has been a real issue. I think the penalty kill has not been great lately either. And, you know, whether that's just a lull in a natural progression of a long season, you could say that. But it gives them something to work on here. And, you know, the biggest issue facing them, I think, is the schedule. They play every other night or back-to-back from now until early April. So they don't get to coast into the postseason and rest on their laurels. They have a lot of work to do, and it's going to be a grind, and they have an older team. So this kind of limits maybe some of the rest that you might have wanted them to get. So a little bit of concern, but ultimately I think you need to face some adversity before the Stanley Cup playoffs begin, and that's what they're getting now.
Our former Black Bear Jeremy Swayman has had some struggles lately. Is he a guy they can depend on in the playoffs the way he's played the last couple of weeks?
Maybe. It does feel like it's kind of top down, and you know, Dmitry Orlov has been a great addition offensively and defensively. He's been fine, but what it's done is flip the whole defensive rotation, where someone new is sitting every night and the defensive pairs are mixed up and Orlov's playing with someone different every night. And I think that is a net negative for the team. I understand why Montgomery has done that to sort of see where he fits best and let it settle and let the chips fall where they may while giving guys rest. So short term, I get it. But I do think in the coming days and weeks, they're going to have to set a regular lineup, which means someone, whether it's Connor Clifton or whomever, is going to have to be a regular healthy scratch, which is a tough decision to make. But I think ultimately something like that is going to help get that defense back to the consistent level where, you know, the goalie is in position that he's been in all year. And I think that works both ways. We saw Omar give up 5 goals last night. It was just the second time all year and the first time since, I want to say, mid-November against Pittsburgh that he allowed 5 goals. First time they allowed more than 3 goals since then, too. So I think team-wide, it's just kind of coming apart. I think Bergeron last night said they're disconnected, which I think is a good way to put it. And they're going to have to sort of brick by brick start building it back together, because something's definitely come undone, and I think that trickles all the way down to the goal.
Who do you think is the biggest threat to them in the East?
Well, Carolina had a huge loss this week with the Svechnikov injury, so that's going to affect it pretty bad. But it's a pretty, you know, Tampa's not having a great year, but they're still Tampa. I think they have sort of that NBA threat where even if they're, you know, the whatever fourth seed, call it. I know the NHL has its wacky seedings. They're going to be a tough out if they make it to the second round, and if they don't make it to the second round, that means Toronto made it, which means Toronto won a playoff series. which means their confidence will be pretty high in that second round. And then if you get to the third round, honestly, the Metro winner, whether it's the Rangers or the Devils are quietly having an outstanding year. They're going to be a good team. So I don't think there's any easy path to the Stanley Cup final. Maybe if they reach the Cup final, that team from the West will be, I don't want to say the easiest, but one of the easier series they face along the way. So I understand there's tendency to want to look at the record and look at all the wins and say that it's a fait accompli that they'll be in that Stanley Cup final, but I don't know, that road looks tough, and if they are going to get there, it's going to be a challenge. I don't see any gimmies outside of maybe the first round.
Michael Hurley, WBZ in Boston, joining us this afternoon. Michael, thanks as always, appreciate it, and we'll catch up with you again before too long.
Sounds good. Thank you.